available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. Fight! I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC.
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome everyone back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Pac-12 football. We are doing an emergency. Do I have an emergency sound? I don't really have.
I'll do one.
Okay. Wow.
Do you like it?
Yeah, that's just kind of blowing out my my audio there.
You win some, you lose some.
It's an emergency podcast. It's a live podcast. It's a Sunday podcast after a wild Pac-12 weekend, the final regular season weekend of Pac-12 football. We got to get to a lot of stuff, but we have like huge breaking news that David Shaw is out at the University of Stanford.
He stepped down.
So we had to do an emergency show. Plus, it's like, we don't want to wait till like Wednesday, you know, like this. We wanted to really talk about this. It was a very, very juicy weekend of Pac-12 football. So we got to get to that. We got to get to Arizona State finding their man, Kenny Dillingham, who's 21 years old, I believe.
Can I start the ball rolling?
Oh, what do you want? Yeah.
Denny Killingham.
I love it. Denny Killingham. That's great. So we're going to do a regular show where we're going to recap everything. I don't even know if we have a line for the Pac-12 championship game, but we'll talk about all that. The crazy things that had to happen to get Utah into the Pac-12 championship game. So much to get to. We want to get to all of it. If you have any questions or comments, I know we just did a show a few days ago, but we have a few questions, but you can still email us, pac12podcast@gmail.com. Maybe we'll do another show before the conference championship game on Friday. We'll figure that out too. But you can also call or text us at 424-532-0678. And you can tweet us at Pac-12 Podcast or go to our website, pac12podcast.com. I forgot to update it last week. We did put up the show. We put up a content item across 24/7 Sports Network, but we didn't put it up on the blog. So I will make sure I get that one up as well. So my apologies for that. You can go to Reddit.
My apologies.
Yeah. Reddit.com/r/podcastofchampions to talk with other POC listeners. And of course, the main one, the big one. That's what we all care about. The Apple Podcasting app, any of the podcasting app you have, we'd love for you to subscribe to the show, Podcast of Champions, because we think it's great. You probably don't, but we think it's cool. We've been doing it for like 6-7 years or something like now. But if you leave us a 5-star rating, positive review, negative review, whatever. As long as you leave us those 5 stars, we absolutely love it. We ask for it every single time. I don't know if we got any new ones, Dave.
Since we have a new review.
We do. Wow.
This is from a friend of the woods. 5 stars. Subject line, Dave does not have an echoic memory. I first started listening to this podcast for the sole reason that it was the sole podcast I could find that was dedicated to the Pac-12 and not recorded in a teenager's bedroom. Then Ryan and Dave's personalities worked their way into my soul, and I started looking forward to wasting an hour and a half each week on their musings. Then, a few episodes back, Dave butchered the tune to the Badger, Badger, Badger song from BadgerBadgerBadger.com,
yes,
and I grew very angry. Now I'm just listening so that I get to hear when and how Ryan, who seems to be a nice and reasonable person, reveals his inner USC jerk. Or maybe he's just a lizard person. I don't know. Go Bruins.
Nice.
I love it.
Very good one. Thank you for that. He loved the Badger, 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 I guess. You
know? He did not love my send up, my ability to recount the tune, apparently.
No. That's good.
I don't know where I failed.
We have some comments about your that was a cat in heat.
My emergency noise?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going for a cat in heat. Can we get some motherfucking likes in here?
Yeah, we need some likes.
There are 85 people watching this, and we have 11 likes.
Come on. Smash.
We're going to actually turn this thing off if you don't start hitting the like button. Hit that, and if you haven't subscribed, hit that too.
Yeah.
All right?
Subscribe. But that little there's a little notification there that'll like let you know when we go live. You should do that too, because you want to be bothered whenever we decide to. Whenever we get bothered to do the show, you would really want to know. Be notified on your phone. Hey, POC, they just decided to do a live show. So jump in there and do all that. Since we just did a show, you know, we did our show Thursday, or did we do it Friday? I forget which day we did. But
it was Wednesday.
Was it Wednesday we did the show?
It was Wednesday, because Thursday was Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah. So we did it right before Thanksgiving. Or did Correct. We do it after? No, we did it before. Yeah, we got the 75% sale going on still at 24/7 Sports. So I think it ends tomorrow. So make sure you jump in there. The Black Friday sale. Yeah. If you're a fan of any of these teams, crazy stuff happening all across the Pac-12.
Crazy. Pets' heads falling off.
We got coaches being walking away, coaches being hired, people making bowl games, half the damn conference winning 9 games. There's a lot of good stuff going on. So whoever your local provider is, or you're the school of your choice, make sure you get in. If you're not a subscriber, get in there, 75% off. I don't get a percentage from just, you know, when you go buy Beaver Blitz subscription, doesn't help me at all, but it helps Angie. That helps me because I like Angie. So we wanted to do that.
A rising tide lifts all boats. And what is the Pac-12 if not a rising tide?
Right. That we will be abandoning in about a year.
Don't say that.
Oh, sorry. Not we're abandoning. We're still doing the show. Like, even if the schools we cover are gone.
We're going down with this ship, baby.
Yeah. We will definitely go down with that. We'll get to some other kind of, I don't know, should we just, well, let's jump into David Shaw. We can get to some of the other
let's
stuff.
Let's jump in to David Shaw.
Yeah. Big time. David Shaw, the man who, if you don't follow Pac-12 football, think of David Shaw as like the young, innovative guy that pushes the limits mathematically.
Yeah.
Any kind of small
edge. He definitely does push the limits of what is acceptable math. That is certainly something he does. David Shaw, yesterday, not yesterday, early this morning, actually, yeah. After the BYU game, which ended sometime, I don't know, after 11:30, in the post-game press conference, announced, kind of a shocker to everyone, that he's done at Stanford. It's being characterized as a resignation. They did go 3-9 this year. They went 3-9 last year. They've been very bad for a very long time now. So I wouldn't be surprised if there was a little bit of mutual pressure there. But he's resigning. As we've said on this show, he should no longer be coaching at Stanford. He's clearly the game, the surrounding elements of the game and everything involved with being a college football head coach has passed him by, and he has no interest in catching up to that moving train as it continues to pass him by. So this is good for Stanford. I think if you're a Stanford fan, you have to be happy about it. Now, if you want to, you know, if you want to be fair to David Shaw, he first 5 years as the head coach at Stanford, I would say he was the best or second best or third best coach in the league. And then the game changed, and he didn't. And he was one of the worst coaches in the league the last 4 or 5 years. And that's his legacy.
I think that's fair. I mean, he was the Pac-12 coach of the year four times.
Yeah.
Pac-12 coach of the year. Winningest coach in Stanford history. This was really weird when I was like, I got back from the Coliseum and you're kind of doing your work. And it was in the midnight. It was midnight range, right? It was after midnight, maybe, when this started to break. Was it after?
Yeah, if you'd listened to anything I just said, I would have shared this with you.
I know, but I was like trying to think of like exact timing of when this started.
It was after midnight. He leads off the press conference by looking at his watch and saying, "Good morning." That's how good David Shaw is.
He's pretty good. So this, yeah, and we'll get to what happened. But he put out some of the statements that they were, you know, that he expressed this morning, I guess you could say. There were some interesting ones, and I'll read you a little bit. He said, "This program is in a better position than it looks."
False.
Like you mentioned, 3-9 in the last 2 years. "The transfer portal will be very, very enticing to a lot of people. There are programs that are already illegally backdoor recruiting, have been doing it for months. I hope a lot of these guys stay. We'll have guys leave for the NFL. We'll have guys graduate. We'll have a couple of the older guys make other decisions. But I think the core of this football team can be very, very good. Can be very good. You saw a lot of them playing out there this year. Some as true freshmen." That's so bizarre. No, true freshmen never playing college football. "Some as sophomores. A lot of really good football players. Excited to see what they can do in the future. Excited about the conversations that we've had on our campus and our administration." And it kind of goes on and on and on there. But so we've talked about NIL. We've talked about a lot of things. working to continue to improve our game day experience here at Stanford. Proud of these things, these initiatives, proud of the guys. We're not that far away. I'm still saying we are not that far away. He says, that being said, as right now, there's no desire for me to coach another team. It's not what this is about. I'm going to spend a lot of time with my family. He said he was very grateful for Stanford, the community and all that. Just walking around the building. Our building is a Hall of Fame. We've got Hall of Fame coaches in every sport, left and right. It's just so exciting to be with that group. I appreciate the group. Appreciate my family for putting up with this ridiculous profession. He was asked about the final straw, like, you know, what pushed you over the edge? And he says he didn't accept the premise of that question. There's no final straw. You know, he doesn't make things up when he comes to the podium. He's just trying to tell you the truth is what he was saying. He says, a week ago, I wasn't here, off season plans, what we were doing, we were going recruiting, and how we're going forward. Really, it was less than a week. And as I sat before Thanksgiving, he prayed about it and thought about it and talked to his wife. And he said it cemented in his head. He saw that it was time. So he says, it's been great. It's been a great run. A lot of people that think our program is down. That's what our record says. But look at the components. I look at the people here. The support that I'm hearing coming out of the athletic director, from our university president, the people that are behind the scenes, we're not that far away, David Woods. But once again, a week, 10 days ago, I was gung-ho to be the person to lead us there. And over the last few days, I realized it was time. It was time for me to step aside. Time for the next group to come in and hopefully do whoever they hire next wins more games than I do. That would be awesome. I would love that.
Hard to do that.
I was going
to
say, that's not that hard.
Because Stanford has won 6 games in the last 2 years combined.
Yeah.
So that won't be that difficult. It's a lot of apologia, a lot of, explaining with not explaining that it's not his fault, that it's, you know, all the circumstances.
Or it's almost like we're not that far away. We're
super far away, buddy.
Yeah. The record's a record. Like, you're 3-9.
And Stanford is, you know, I think there's probably more room to do the transfer portal than he has done, but it's still like not
any room.
Yeah. But it's still not, what other schools can do with reloading. So Stanford is just naturally further away than any program at any given moment if they're down, because they can't reload as quickly. Now, the next fit at Stanford, I think, is the much more interesting question, which is, you know, a lot of people have bandied about Chris Peterson, which sounds right. Mm. I think they're yet another Pac-12 program who, you know, Cal doesn't seem like it's going to open, but Jim Mora sweepstakes, baby. I mean, I know and we'll get to Colorado, what they've done of late. But I know Colorado was talked about as potential destination for my birthday buddy, Jim Mora. But Stanford, I think that could be a fit too. You know, he's dealt with academic requirements at UCLA. Stanford's a cut above that, but it's still, you know, he's recruited within those bounds before.
Yeah.
I don't think Stanford is a horrible job, and I think David Shaw has made it seem like one for the last 4 or 5 years, but there is a way to recruit there that actually – Stanford, back in the day, they won a lot of recruiting battles because the academic cachet matters to parents in a huge way. Mm. If parents can play – if their kids can play high-level football and get a Stanford degree and an education, that's hard to beat. I mean, Stanford won head-to-heads with USC in recruiting.
Oh, yeah. No, we would cover those guys. And if it was like, hey, man, there's like, I'm just going to go to Stanford, you know, and they were usually good then, too. So it's kind of, it's a little more difficult now when they suck.
Yeah, but they need to be good. But if you get the right guy in there who's actually like really competitive on the recruiting trail and you add everything else in, they can pitch some stuff and actually quickly turn this around recruiting-wise, and then in a 2 or 3 year span have them pretty good again. So I think it's not that far off from that perspective, where if they add a bunch of guys, but the current roster sucks and obviously the coaching staff is abysmal.
Yeah. There might be some confusion. Steven says there's people waiting on the Inside Troy channel. I do have a live show, but that'll be tonight at 7 p.m. So I put that out there. Hopefully I scheduled it for the right time, but this one looks like it was scheduled for 2 p.m. I think this one's normal. So the POC people should be here. So my apologies if there was something wrong with that, but just tell, you know, go over there. If you're on the Inside Troy channel, tell them, come over to POC channel. That's where we are right now. And if I put something wrong, my apologies again.
Apologize.
I think Jim Mora would leave Connecticut in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I can't.
It's Connecticut.
Why would anybody stay at Connecticut?
I don't know. So that would be a good one. But, you know, Chris Peterson. So, oh, crap. I think I might have to fix the Inside Troy one. Okay. I will.
Well, we're currently inside David Shaw.
We're inside David Shaw. Perfect. Someone kind of put that up there and stuff too. So, but that was the big news. You know, David Shaw going there. We also have some other, you know, breaking news. The young man's coming home within hours after, we don't want to spoil it, but the Civil War ended. We find out Kenny Dillingham, 32 years old, youngest head coach in the FBS, Arizona State guy, is going to Tempe to take over the mess that Herm Edwards left. Had a press conference this morning, Sunday morning, and if you follow along with Chris Cartman, he won it. He told a reporter to ask him about Sean Aguero, right?
Uh-huh.
Are we going to be retained? He said, ask me if he's going to be retained. He's going to be retained. That was kind of cool. But apparently, it was great. You want to win the press conference, and he apparently did that. But what do you think about the move for Arizona State?
I think it was the obvious move, and I think it was a good one.
Yes.
You know, people, I said I think this hire is great on Twitter, and people thought I was joking. I really do. I think, yeah, there's downside? Is there downside potential with hiring an alum and an unknown who's really only, you know, only fully coordinated 1 year? Yeah. But you know what else? There's downside with any hire. Any head coaching hire, no matter who it is, unless it's Nick Saban or Urban Meyer or, you know, well, and Urban Meyer's got his own downsides. But any of these guys, they're even if they were a proven commodity before, there's no guarantee they're going to be a fit and make sense and all that other stuff. You already know that this guy gets Tempe, that he understands how to recruit at ASU, that he understands, you know, all the recruiting angles with the high school coaches. You saw him walking into his press conference, he was greeting those high school coaches like old friends. He knows these guys. I think he's going to recruit Arizona better than probably any head coach they've had in many, many moons. And he's a, you know, an energetic guy who I think is going to hit the recruiting trail hard in California as well. And like, this is not to be discounted. That offense rocks. Oregon's offense, even with a really hobbled Bo Nix, put up, what did they score against Oregon State? 35? What did it end up being? 34? 34 against Oregon State with a hobbled Bo Nix. Oregon State is good. Their defense is really good. That game was not lost on the offensive end. It was lost on special teams. But he's a really good offensive mind. I think Lan Danning did a great job hiring him. And I think this is good identification. I don't buy that Ray Anderson had a whole lot to do with this, signed the checks or whatever, but this seemed like it was an obvious inertial move, like this needed to happen. Probably a groundswell among ASU people to make this happen.
Yeah.
But I think it's as close to a, this is what needed to happen. This is the obvious hire. Good job, ASU.
No, I think it makes a lot of sense. Sometimes you need, I mean, you had the grandpa there, you know, you got pretty much go the opposite, right? I mean, you have to get the young energy. He's got young energy.
A lot of ageism here from Ryan.
Apparently, but you need that. You need some young energy there.
Damn.
And he showed some maturity being the offensive coordinator for the Ducks this year. Like you said, you know, you had Bo Nix who, you know, had a rough road, and now he's, you know, you basically rebuilt his credibility, and people think a lot differently of Bo Nix than they would have if he just left Auburn last year and where he is now. So, I think it helps a lot. You know, I don't think it had anything to do with what, you know, the Ducks did. We'll talk about what the Ducks did yesterday. But, you know, if a young coach like that gets an opportunity to be a head coach, I think that's great. I'm curious to see what the power dynamic above him is. I'm curious to see what the NCAA comes down and says, you know, they could hit ASU with sanctions. Is Ray Anderson, like, was he really a big part of this hire, or was it more people behind the scenes and then Ray Anderson's going to be out next and they already have their head coach? And I'm curious to see how that all kind of plays out. But as the way it's going now, I think you just needed something positive. You needed something to kind of, here's hope, you know, we need some hope. And you got it, I think, with Kenny Dillingham.
Yeah, and
I think he's going to immediately pay dividends. I think he'll be probably active in the transfer portal. I think
he said he was going to crush the transfer portal or something like that. I forget the quote, but he said.
But I would guess
we're going to attack the transfer
portal. And
it already
sounds like they're getting NIL commitments from boosters to make their fund pretty good. But I would say big priority is a quarterback. You know, get a quarterback. Get somebody who can run his system. I don't think Trenton Bourget is the guy to run his system. But get somebody who's got some wheels. And I think given what he showed with Bo Nix, I would have to imagine ASU is going to be an attractive destination for a transfer quarterback.
Yeah. No, I think it would be too. The game is changing, and I feel like ASU sort of, I don't know, like the way college football was going was sort of this way, and you're following this path, and it, you know, there was a deviation, and ASU sort of went even the other way and just sort of like, we're going to do it this way. We're going to like old CEO type and just, you know, and it was just like completely the opposite of like the trend of where college football was going. And now you're trying to get back onto that trend, which makes a lot of sense. So I'm happy for our guy, Chris Cartman. I think they're going to be killing the coverage over there. And yeah, looking forward to what Colorado does and Adam Munster-Tiger. And those guys.
Oh, yeah. If you have not signed up, if you're an ASU fan listening to this and you have not signed up for Sun Devil Source, you need to get on that.
Get on it.
I mean, I'm just gonna guess at something here, but Kenny Dillingham's a 32-year-old guy who's already been on staff in an assistant role, and Cartman's been covering the team for basically his entire career at ASU. So if you have ever wondered if one of these reporters might have an in with a head coach,
it's probably
that guy. So if you want the inside scoop on everything ASU, you get your butt over to Sun Devil Source.
For sure. And follow along in the Colorado coaching search, Buff Stampede, for sure, with our buddy Adam. So Adam Munster-Tiger.
Yes. And
they've been crushing things.
There's a big piece of news there.
Oh, Dave Plotty, right? Their SID is retiring.
No.
Oh, what was the big piece of news? Sorry.
Deion Sanders was offered the job at Colorado.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yes.
Very cool.
He was offered the job 3 days ago.
Who reported that?
I think initially Munster-Tiger was putting it out there on the board.
Nice.
But then it's been confirmed by a variety of other sources. So that would be interesting. I'm in love with that. If Colorado somehow lands Deion Sanders as their head coach, I think that would be awesome. I think he'd recruit the hell out of that job. He's had a lot of success at Jackson State.
That's a tough one to take, man. If you're
Deion, it would be a tough one to take. I don't know if you sit around and wait a little bit longer.
Yeah.
But
that's just like, I want a Power 5 job. Like, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, that would be what it is.
You could get other ones.
But that would be what it is like getting the staff money, getting all that stuff that you can't really get at the HBCU.
Yeah.
But that would be interesting. That would certainly add some just like watchability factor to Colorado.
They
also just need some juice on the recruiting trail.
Again, young energy. You need that. That'd be great. There was other like coaches like Luke Fickell going to Wisconsin. That's pretty nuts. Matt Rhule jumping in and going to Nebraska. We still got to see what Auburn's going to do.
There's another big piece of breaking news. This is the biggest piece of breaking news we have here on this show.
It is? Crap.
Michael Mothershed.
Oh, yes.
Has refereed his last game in the Pac-12. Oh, my God. When I heard this on the broadcast.
He painted a masterpiece for your Friday game.
He really did.
It was his, like, chapel. Like, he dropped the
He was drawing in crayon all over that goddamn thing. And it was incredible. Absolutely just annihilating to watch that. It was truly otherworldly. We're going to miss him. You never thought somebody could eclipse glasses ref, right? You never thought somebody
could
say, oh, wow, no, that guy, I'm going to make my explanations of plays more opaque. I'm going to fuck up basic administration of the game in more avant-garde ways. And then Michael Mothershed, he emerged from a cocoon.
Someone needs to make his Twitter handle or something.
Yes.
You could do that.
Yeah,
dude.
Mothershedding. Anyway, it's a sad time, obviously, for all of us. Mm. But we'll get past it together, as we always do.
We do. That's a big one. We had a question from Touchdown USC. Any Ducks assistants following Dillingham to ASU? I haven't heard yet. The only thing I heard was that he was, you know, keeping Aguero on staff. So,
yeah.
You heard anything on that, or I don't know.
Isn't it Aguano?
Aguano. I'm sorry. Did I say the wrong? I said the wrong thing.
Yeah.
My bad.
It's okay.
My apologies.
Well, I think it would be cool if it was Aguaro, because his first initial is S, so it would be Saguaro.
Saguaro.
Because that would be very Arizona.
It sounds very Arizona.
Yeah. He should change his name to Aguaro. Sean Aguaro.
I'm in. I like it.
All right.
Okay, what else? Because we're doing this early, we don't know what the college football rankings are yet, football playoff rankings are, but we do have the AP poll. We have 6 Pac-12 teams in the top 17 of the AP poll. USC 4, Washington 9, Utah 12, Oregon 15, Oregon State 16, which they just played, which is weird, and UCLA 17. So boom, 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 right in a row. You love AP polls. Any thoughts on that?
My only thought is Oregon State, that's ridiculous that they're still behind Oregon. And then also, if JT Daniels had ended up in Corvallis this offseason, they would be in the playoff contention.
JT Daniels got benched, though. But I guess their quarterback play has been so bad.
Yeah.
We did have someone that wanted Tanner McKee to transfer to Oregon State.
I don't think you want Tanner McKee.
No? I mean, with a good offensive line and a run game would be kind of interesting.
Yeah, he's kind of a statue. I haven't been impressed with him, even like if you distance him from what that offense actually is. Like, he's missing throws in a way that you wouldn't really anticipate from an NFL guy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think he looks further away than he did a year ago. And yeah, that's probably a testament to the bad development there. But I don't know. He's more of a reclamation project. And Jonathan Smith is obviously a little bit of a quarterback whisperer. He's turned Ben Gulbranson into like a semi-credible Pac-12 quarterback. But
yeah,
I think they should set their sights higher if they're going in the portal.
I think so. Try to get somebody good there. If you haven't sent in, so now we know who's in the Pac-12 championship game, USC and Utah. So we want to know the winner, and we want to know the total score. I did get an email from Ryan, the winner. He wants me to be now called the other Ryan for the rest of the show since he beat me in the survivor pool stuff. He also pointed out that George Kliavkov only has one like on his Twitter account, like only liked one post, and it's kind of a weird one, so you can go check that out if you want. But I'll read you his email, if that's okay, because he won, so I give him that, and we're going to send him a jockey gift card. I'm disappointed that Dave and his disciples didn't have the vision to pick against Cal on the road at Colorado. They should have recognized that somebody was going to need to, quote, steal a possession in the, quote, pick against Colorado game. Dave was playing to avoid this doomed 10-plus person tie, and that Cal was the best bet. But maybe they, unlike me, had not been going to Cal games from birth with season ticket-holding parents and had not been given the opportunity to fully contemplate Cal's road ineptitude. Dave's David Shaw-like conservatism was never going to win outright in a competitive contest like this, and he led the people astray by playing for overtime. I'm glad Matthew asked for his picks to be censored before he could do more harm. But also pass along my thanks to Matthew from Mountain View for running the pool. I grew up one town over from Mountain View, and he played volleyball against both MVHS and St. Francis. And I was also at Big Game having a different experience to this. He did a great job, and I appreciated the detail he put into the sheets. Go Bears, go Bruins. Thanks for the pod, Ryan. Thanks. Congrats, Ryan. You won, and that's awesome.
Yes.
And if anyone else, I think we got one email so far. So pac12podcast@gmail.com of the tiebreaker. So if you were in the tiebreaker of the, I think it was 10 people, make sure you send those in.
Tremendous.
And that would be wonderful. We would appreciate that very much. We mentioned that the title game is going to be Friday, Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas. I will be there. David will not, but we will have a POC, at least half a POC meetup. Park MGM is the media hotel. So we're going to do one of the bars there. I'll put it up on Twitter and stuff, but plan on Thursday night if you want to come out and meet me and other POC listeners, probably a lot of Utes fans and USC fans. So make sure you kind of come out there and we'll have some drinks and, should be a lot of fun. So come out there. And just so you know, like the way this had to happen, we knew on Friday night that Washington was out because it was a three-way potential, you know, there was three teams that could get in. The Utes needed a bunch of help. They had an easy game in Colorado, but they needed UCLA to beat Cal. That happened Friday night. Oregon State had to beat Oregon. That happened in dramatic fashion. We'll get into that. And then Washington, the double whammy, not only beat Oregon, but now they beat Washington State, and that sent Oregon packing and Utah to the Pac-12 championship game. It actually gives Washington a chance to make the Rose Bowl. If USC ends up going to the playoff, they'd be the highest ranked team in that case. But a lot of weird things had to happen. Dave, I tweeted out like Washington kind of got Oregon twice by beating them and then also beating Washington. And some one of the other Pac-12 podcasts got really mad at me, said delete the account. Do you know what that was about? I don't even understand.
I don't know. I don't. I saw the same thing.
Did I do something wrong there?
I don't know. I truly don't.
Maybe I don't understand.
I feel like there's like an opacity and sometimes an insularity to Pac-12 Twitter and the people on it, as if they're all like they've got like one in joke, and who knows? Sometimes we don't get it. We're old.
So. I'm an old. Like I really felt this was an old. It said like hashtag delete your account, and I was just like, all I said was like. That Washington beat, I don't know. No, I think it was Washington and Oregon State teamed up.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah. They teamed up to knock Oregon out of the Pac-12 championship, which they did. And I don't know. It wasn't, and I don't think any of them are Oregon fans, so I'm not sure why that would be.
I don't know.
But I just, if there's any non-olds out there that can explain to me what I did wrong.
Please, non-olds, help Ryan.
Let me know. Yeah. Our buddy John Wilner tweeted out, Dave, that, or he wrote in his column, we have six Pac-12 teams with nine victories. So the first time that's happened since 2014. So pretty good.
Yeah, it's a really interesting league because you have three of the like historically worst versions of programs ever in Colorado, Stanford, and ASU.
Yeah.
And then you've got six good teams. Like legitimately, these are good teams who, you know, at various points in the year looked like contenders for the league title.
Yeah.
Very interesting league this year.
It's much better. Like, this is way better than parity, I think. You know, like, you're down in the bottom, fire coach, get a new one, and try to get back up. You're like, hey, Jed Fish, they were terrible. Like, oh, now they're 5-7. Like, they're climbing up the ladder. Like, I'd rather have a bunch of good teams and some shit teams, you know, and kind of work it that way and work your way back up. Instead of like, oh, it's great when the worst team in the league beats the best team in the league. And then, you know, like, that doesn't help us.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I love that stuff. We got a whole bunch of people in the chat. Smash that like button, please. I want to let us know, too. And, you know, I'm going to give David props. He had a monster week. We both had a really good week.
I missed perfection by 2 points.
Craziness.
Yeah.
So we had 7 games against the spread. I went 0-2 on Friday and then 5-0 yesterday. And Dave went 1-1 Friday and 5-0 yesterday. We only had the one game differently. I picked UCLA. He picked Cal. And UCLA didn't cover the 10 that we had out there. And we both, you know, just missed the Territorial Cup by a little bit. That was a weird one, that 4-point spread or whatever. But, yeah, it was a really good week. And it was funny. I told David off the air, like, want to thank our sponsor, MyBookie, because they've done a great job. And I've had so much fun betting all the lines and everything, you know, throughout the Pac-12 season. We'll continue doing it through the conference championship and all the bowl games and everything. But, you know, sometimes you gotta get lucky. I forgot to log into my bookie and put in my picks for Friday. So my 0-2 picks didn't bet them. And I bet all of my Saturday picks. Plus I did a three-team parlay and got them all. So that was great. But if you go over to my bookie, use promo code PAC12 and they will match your first deposit, 50% of your first deposit up there. So get extra money when you put it in there. You want to bet the championship game? A bunch of NFL stuff coming up. Of course, they have a whole, you know, with the holidays, they have all these kind of deals and specials and stuff going on over at MyBookie. You can play a little blackjack, whatever you want to do, but use the promo code PAC12 and that will get you your deposit, half your deposit matched by MyBookie. It's great. Go over in there, check it out. We're going to keep betting. We'll have the championship game and then all the different bowl games. So we'll kind of go through with that. So I'm now 2 games behind David. I was 1, and this one was 2, but our records are really good. I mean, I'm 10 games above 500. You are 14 games above 500, so crushing it this year. This is really good. We're going to keep going. I still haven't cashed my Arizona State under 6.5 wins, so I'm really happy with my bookie account this year. I had a couple of rough weeks before, but I really kind of brought it this week. A little bit lucky, David, because I didn't bet the Friday games, but that worked out pretty good.
I'm proud of you.
Hey, man, we do what we can. Did you even look at the – I change the Pac-12 rankings a little bit, our power rankings. Do you want?
I haven't looked at them, but I can look at them right now.
Anything stand out to you don't like?
Yeah, I don't like you doing the same dumb thing that the AP voters did.
Oh, did I do that?
Yeah.
Oh, switch it.
Okay.
Yeah, put them up there. Yeah, perfect. Yeah, that's true. We just saw it.
Otherwise, it's fine. Yeah.
Nice. We do have like the 6 ranked teams that are at the top, and I think we have our who's the best of the non.
Yeah, we've got what we have is it's 6 teams that are good, 2 teams that are fine, and then 4 teams that are bad.
Yeah.
And that's what the league is this year.
And we've seen, I mean, even the bad teams, we've seen like a game or two that they've actually looked competent. Maybe one team, only one game that looked competent, but we'll get to all that stuff. But, you know, it was a battle all season. I mean, we've had some bad teams, David, bad teams in this conference. Who was going to be 12? Like, who was going to end the season in the 12th spot? Because people were fighting. Like, this was
competitive until the final weeks, and then one team really pulled ahead.
It's kind of like, yeah, like you put the rocket boosters on. Like, you're like, there was like a Pinewood Derby. They're kind of going down the hill. And then somebody had a jetpack attached to their little wooden car. It just went.
They went rocket boosters the last few weeks. The level of suck was just out of control. You can only tip your cap.
But our number 12 team, and one of the greatest, worst teams
one
in
of,
Pac-12
one
history.
Of the truly most disgusting versions of a football team we've ever seen.
Yeah, our number 12 team.
Colorado Buffalo.
And I guess you could say they showed up. This was at home. Spread that was under 30 points for some inexplicable reason. Taking on the number 14 team.
Utah Utes.
And number 2 in our power rankings.
Yeah. Utah absolutely could have picked its score in this game. And if Utah had not pulled its starters at halftime, literally at halftime, they might have scored 100. Just an absolute, just, I don't even have a good word for it. Just a flattening of Colorado. This was 42-0 at half. And the only reason was like a little bit of glitchiness early from Utah. But otherwise, I mean, it was just disaster play from Colorado. I think they had
glitchiness. It was 42-0. What was the where was the glitch?
They punted. they punted once. And they turned it over on downs once.
We should drop them to 3.
That's rankings. What I'm saying. I'm saying like they had 2 drives where they didn't score in that first half.
Wow.
Colorado at one point, I think I tweeted it out, at one point in the middle of the second quarter, they had 6 total yards of offense, and Utah had, I think, 280. And it wasn't like it got a whole lot better from there. It finished looking a lot better because it wasn't even just the second string, like the third string Utah defense was out there after a little while. But Colorado was still under 200 yards. They started something called a Maddox Cop in this game at quarterback. Never heard of this guy.
The what?
Their quarterback, a Maddox Cop. Don't know.
That's not a meme? Like, that's a thing?
No, that's a real thing.
It's a human?
And they've started so many quarterbacks this year, you might be thinking, oh, wow, we've seen this guy before. No, he's a new one. He's a new character in the cast of Colorado's football season.
Is that one like you know, the sitcom is, like, just tanking in the ratings, and they need to bring in, like, oh, here's the long-lost little cousin the cute kid.
And he was really bad, too. I mean, as are all Colorado quarterbacks, but he was really bad, too. It was a horrible, horrible offensive effort. Utah, when the starters were in, Cam Rising missed 2 passes, two passes in the entire game.
Should cut him.
They ran the ball for almost 400 yards. They won 63-21. It could have been 63-0. It could have been 70-0. It could have been 77-0 if they had decided to keep their starters in. Bryson Barnes came in and literally threw a pick on his first throw. That was his only incompletion in the game, and he completed it to a Colorado player in the third quarter. Colorado, impressive. Just an impressive football team.
How was this line? So Colorado hadn't covered 30-point spreads, was it 3? I think it was 3 weeks in a row, and then they dropped the spread to 29.5?
Made absolutely no sense. Colorado is back to doing what it was at the beginning of the year, which is losing to spreads by like double digits every single
like
week.
Like the spread, like the spread to beat the spread or lose the spread was double digits.
Somebody, if somebody can like do the math, because I'm not going to have the energy to do it, but like what was Colorado's like score differential versus the spread this year?
It'd be pretty bad. Yeah.
I think the total differential probably approached like 80 or 90 points. It's incredible how bad they were.
But this was pretty easy. So when I was picking my parlay, I'm like, this was like the first thing I put in there. I'm like, how? Like, I guess maybe Utah doesn't show up or something and they don't whatever. But maybe. Like you said, 42-0 at half. And I was just like, why am I going to take any notes on this game? Like, this is just ridiculous. 662 yards for Utah. 185 big ones for Colorado. Triple digits.
Almost all of them second half. Almost all of them.
Yeah.
Like, they had, I think, 20 yards in the first half.
Cam Rising, 89.4%. It's the best completion percentage on record for a Utah quarterback. So this season, you know how many games, you know, I'm an old. I don't remember how many games people play in a typical college football year. Do you remember offhand, like 12, 13?
12.
You 12. Know, well, yeah. They lost 10 of those 12 by 23 or more points.
Oh.
10 of the losses by 23.
Is that bad?
That's pretty bad. They started this game four straight three and outs. Like, literally, you get the ball four times, three and out, three and out, three and out, three and out. Not like punt, 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 but all three and outs. They were one for 12 on third down for the game. Like, what do you want to know about? They're just bad. So this was like beat the dead horse, whatever. Like, like you said, Colorado could have picked, I mean, Utah could have picked a score. The easiest cover maybe we've had all year.
It couldn't have been easier.
If you're listening to another Pac-12 show and they said, that's a lot of points, Colorado's at home, like, never listen to that show again, because they've never watched this conference. They don't know what the hell they're talking about, I would say.
Exactly.
I feel pretty confident about that. Okay, we mentioned this team a little bit already. Number 11.
Stanford Cardinal.
They're close, from what I heard.
They were not close. They took on the BYU Cougars. All right, so this is a classic game because you look at the final score and you're like, oh, Stanford played a competitive football game.
No.
They did not. Nope. No, sir, they did not. This game was 35-12 heading into, I think it was the fourth quarter. Yeah. So heading into the fourth quarter, this was 35-12 with 12:48 to go in the fourth. And then Stanford does what Stanford does this year, which is put a bunch of lipstick on the pig. They scored two fourth quarter touchdowns to make this look semi-respectable. It wasn't. Stanford's horrible.
They're close.
So far away from being a good quality team.
They have freshmen that played.
This is not a good BYU team. They've had a lot of issues this year. They ran for 360 yards in this game.
They won their last, like, four games or something, but they had a, I think maybe they had like a four game losing streak and then they won the last three or something.
Yeah,
like
they're
that.
They're not super good. They're not.
But they're BYU, like a bowl team.
Yeah, but they're not what BYU was the last couple of years. Like, this isn't a team that should like just come in and dominate a Pac-12 team. They came in and dominated this team.
I definitely heard it might have been our friends over like Pac-12 radio, and they were like, BYU's really bad. Stanford, this is gonna be a good spot for Stanford. And I was like,
again,
I don't think
like,
that.
What are we watching? What are we watching, guys?
You've seen Stanford.
Stanford, if Colorado didn't exist, would be the clear-cut worst team in the Pac-12. They're really, really, really bad. They're bad, bad, bad.
Yeah.
Very, very bad. They can't score. I mean, if BYU had just kept pouring it on, this would have been yet another game where Stanford doesn't score over 20.
Yeah.
They did, but Stanford's horrible. David Shaw should have been fired or resigned or whatever ended up happening. So all's well, but they're horrible. Really bad football team.
Bad, bad, bad. So remember I think we got a jinx thing going on. Do you remember the call we got from the Zodiac Killer about perfection?
Uh-huh. Did he miss?
Not a field goal. Or maybe he did later, but early in the game. So hold on. First of all, Stanford scored a touchdown, so that's breaking news.
He missed an extra point.
They got a false start on the extra on the PAT.
There will be no Cardi in the USA.
No Cardi in the USA.
Oh my God!
Yeah,
Zodiac Killer.
False start.
I think the Zodiac Killer is going to go out and murder some people.
Maybe. I mean, like, it's just how many? Like,
oh man,
it's going to be all over the news. Like, just I'm not going to go outside for a while.
Wow,
he's going to go on a freaking rampage. This is the second straight year. So, you know, sometimes we've seen people come out of the gate a little slow. Mm-hmm. You would have finished strong.
Mm-hmm.
If you can get a 5-game losing streak to end the season 2 years in a row, you know, coming out of the pandemic, that's pretty good, right?
Mm-hmm.
They haven't won in November since I don't know when. But yeah, 8 straight losses in November. This is not good. Like, David Shaw had to go.
Yeah.
He gone, but yeah, this was.
He gone. Oh, why? Yeah.
This was bad. All right. Another bad team. Our number 10 team.
California Golden Bears.
They were hosting our number 6 team.
UCLA Bruins.
On a Friday.
Yeah. So this one was super interesting and potentially...
Oh, by the way, we both took BYU -6.5 in Harvard. Correct. Yeah.
This is one where we differed. I took Cal +10. Ryan took UCLA -10.
My bad.
No, I mean, this was a tough one to get because it was so much based on soft factors, like which team is going to be more motivated to play and all that kind of stuff. And I think the obvious takeaway from the first half was that Cal came in motivated and UCLA was a little bit hungover from USC. Cal jumped out to a 21-10 lead. They were mixing in like these really effective deep passes off of kind of tricky formations, where there would be like a fake pitch, then throw deep, or they ran out a diamond formation at one point. They were just doing some nifty, tricky stuff, and it was generating some big yardage because UCLA's cornerbacks are horrible. And it kind of just looked like UCLA was out of sorts. Offensively, they were not fully engaged in the first half. Just a lot of mistakes. They weren't throwing the ball particularly well. Dorian Thompson-Robinson wasn't having a great game. But eventually, what ended up happening was that UCLA started running the ball constantly, all the time, and ended up with 64 carries for 352 yards, 3 touchdowns. Zach Charbonnet was fine. He looked kind of dinged up to me. But TJ Harden, who's a freshman, Colson Yankoff, who's a converted wide receiver, and Thompson Robinson all ran the ball really, really effectively. And Cal just kind of died a little bit offensively. It seemed like once they couldn't keep hitting their big trick plays, they just didn't have the like down-to-down strength. Their running game was not able to do much of anything because Cal's offensive line is horrible. You know, Jaden Ott, basically every time they tried to run Jaden Ott up the middle, it was just blown up for a loss. So, you know, eventually it ended up being 35-28. I predicted 34-27 in my game preview, so it
pretty
was pretty much right on with what I thought it would be.
Yeah.
And, you know, UCLA walks away with the win. They finished 9-3. Cal, you know, obviously a bad team. But very close. Teetered on the knife's edge of Cal. There was a point in this game where if they get a stop before halftime, they're getting the ball coming out of half, already leading by 11, where it could have gone very, very south, but Dorian Thompson-Robinson led a great drive before halftime that got them within 4 points, and then they could they were in striking distance.
Chip Kelly crushing the middle 8. EVS says, Dave, how bad is the UCLA secondary? The worst in the Pac-12?
It's really bad. So the safeties are okay. The safeties are really good in run support, and they're really good at preventing big plays for the most part. This game, I thought they were leaky. But cornerback play, I don't know that there's a set of corners that's worse than the Pac-12.
Yeah, he said putrid corner play. He kind of followed up with that.
Yeah,
That was, you know, it was funny. Cal came out sort of like motivated, like you said. Like they ran that trick play that for a touchdown, I believe, where – it was kind of like that. You look to the side, and it's like everyone thinks the play's not happening. So like,
yeah, they did the fake check with me and snapped the ball, and they were caught napping a little bit. But reality was, there was good coverage on that play, but the cornerback just like was unable to make a play on the ball.
It looked like it went through his arm.
Yeah, just unable to make a play on the ball. Wasn't looking at it at all, and it was a great catch. But that was actually the one defender who actually was engaged. just great throw and catch too.
And you're right. I mean, it was sort of like UCLA looked more hungover and Cal looked like they wanted to play. Like it could have easily been Cal didn't give a crap.
There was no way of gauging that because UCLA has, under Chip Kelly, they haven't had the USC hangover the way they had sometimes under Mora.
Yeah.
So it was hard to gauge. But I think ultimately that's kind of how it played out, is that UCLA was a little bit more like going through the motions, especially early. But then when they got punched in the mouth, I thought they responded.
Yeah. It was – the UCLA offense looked really sluggish in the beginning. But there was, 21-17 at half. The refs were bad in this one. There was just all these weird – it was a perfect way for Mothershed to kind of leave the conference. It was
so beautiful.
There were so many bad things.
There was the one where I still don't really understand what happened. They claimed that they forgot to reset the down marker, and so it sort of looked like UCLA was granted an extra down, but I think the reality was that they just confused themselves on the field and there was no extra down at any point.
I think they took away a run. Like,
it was bizarre what happened.
So it was like basically it was like a first down. I forget what it was, but they
said on the field it was going to be like third and short or whatever.
But he really got the first down.
He really had gotten the first down, and by like a wide margin.
Right.
And
it wasn't even close.
Everything was going to be reset anyway. But UCLA goes up quick and runs it for the first down.
Like for a 2-yard run. So they basically are like, we're trying to pick up third and short.
Right.
And they ran that play.
Yeah. And so
there was an option that they were going to now make it. Said, no, that really was a first down. You just picked up two. Now it's second and eight and really screwed UCLA.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and that was part of the thought process.
The end result was that I thought they got it morally correct. Like they got it like right, which is it's a first down. It's first and 10 from like the 19.
But I think they took away a play. Like,
yeah, yeah. They had to erase a play to make that happen. It was like truly some of the most avant-garde refereeing you've ever seen. We're going to miss Michael Mothershed.
Yeah, that was a weird one. I was like, I don't know what that was going on there. So this is the most single season losses under Justin Wilcox. Worst full season record.
Yet another guy who should be walking into a press conference this week and saying, I'm resigning as the head coach.
Yeah,
he's bad.
I don't think he's doing that. Worst full season record since Cal went 1-11 back in 2013. And the worst conference record since 2017. Also, they went 2-7 that year as well. So 2-7 in the Pac-12. Not no bueno for the sturdy Golden Bears. But they did get the cover and screwed me on that one. We would have been tied otherwise. Okay. Next up, I forget what we called all these. You want me to give the real names?
This is the Apple Cup.
This is the Apple Cup. Okay. We have the Apple Cup between
Arizona State Sun Devils,
our number 9 team, and then our number 8 team,
Arizona Wildcats.
This game was really stupid, and I don't really have a good way to articulate it. Arizona ended up winning 38-35. I don't exactly know how. But I would also say Arizona kind of dominated this game, like statistically. So they should have won by more, but they also should have lost.
Yeah.
So I don't really have like a great overarching theme here, except to say Michael Wiley got hurt in this game at one point, which is why he didn't continue to run the ball. But he had 12 carries, Ryan, for 214 yards.
That's like a lot.
Averaged almost 20 yards per carry in this football game. Big play runs were insane in this game. Jaden Delora did not bounce back from his previous game. He was horrible.
I don't think he fought anybody.
He didn't fight anybody, but he was really bad in this game,
progress,
too. Probably the only reason Arizona didn't pour it on a little bit more is that he was still very iffy in the pass game. But the run game was working in a huge way. They averaged 10 yards a carry collectively. That ended up being a big part of the difference. But then it also got like very gong show at the end. They had to force. So it was to the point where it was like ASU with the ball twice with basically a chance to go ahead and win. And each time the Arizona defense steps up for a turnover.
Yeah.
Like this defense, which has been like the biggest trash can in the league this year, steps up with two turnovers in the closing minutes to ice this one away, leads to a big fight on the field. Like it was insane, the end of this game. Just exactly what you want out of college football. Just stupidity in a game that doesn't matter in any real way. Both teams are bad. Both teams are losing programs. And it just gets silly and shitty at the end. It was so great.
Yeah, this is the one we both got wrong. Another Friday game. We had Arizona -4.
Yeah.
What was the – was it 3? Or what was the
ended up margin being 3, but it
three.
Was Arizona -4.
-4, yeah. So, but this was crazy back and forth. I believe 6 lead changes in the game.
Yeah, the second half got bonkers.
Yeah. Arizona was up 3. They got that late turnover. couldn't convert on fourth and one, and that looked like they were going to cover there. Like they had the fourth and one, they got the late turnover. It's like, oh, they're just okay. Fourth and one. You know, if you kick a field goal, if you do whatever, nope, they go for it, don't get it. And you're like, ugh, they're not going to cover this. But ASU turned it over five times, if I'm not mistaken. That seems one of the coolest plays you will see in college football was when the Aussie punter gets the – like it looks like he was going to try to fake it, and he's running to his right where he's a right-footed and then kind of escaped and then ran to his left.
And booted it left-footed.
Left-footed, like a 32-yard punt. With his left foot, like it was just like, and he gave like the Michael Jordan, like you know, like whatever. He's just that was pretty impressive that he was able to like avert disaster and boot it left footed, didn't get it blocked. You know, just was obviously not a great punt, but just to get 32 yards of field position there when it looked like I don't know if it was like a design fake or whatever.
No, I don't think it was.
It just like it was a weird looking play. Do you ever hear of like a team getting 41 first downs and losing like? That seems like a lot of first downs.
Yes.
And that's what Arizona State did, and they did not win this game. Pretty crazy. But this was a big one for Jed Fish. Five-game losing streak, not all him, but for Arizona to ASU. So snap that. Like you mentioned, Wiley. He had three touchdowns along with those 214 yards. ASU, 537 yards. They had 6.2 yards per play. They ran 87 plays, and Arizona only ran 51. But like you said, they had some huge, big runs there, and that sort of was like the difference. But ASU was moving the ball, but they, you know, you can't turn the ball over. That I mean, what was it? The last two or three drives, they turned it over too. But yep. Five turnovers, that's no bueno.
Can't do that.
But a whole bunch of first downs. So, you know, maybe they were inspired knowing that Kenny Dillingham was coming. I'm just not sure. Okay, we got to get to, this was the Territorial Cup, I believe.
Correct.
Number seven.
Washington State Cougars.
They were hosting our number three team.
Washington Huskies.
Yeah, this is another kind of deceptive final score. Washington ended up winning the Territorial Cup. Territorial. Because the Washington Territory.
Please don't go in the comments and tell us that it's the Apple Cup, okay? Just try to like get the joke.
It's like barely a joke. It's like not even. It's not even funny. Washington beat Washington State 51-33. It was very deceptive because Washington poured it on late. This was a very very close game heading into the fourth quarter. It was very neck and neck for a long time. It seemed like every time Washington looked like it was really putting it together, really generating some big yardage, really you know making big plays. Washington State would come back and respond. I thought Cam Ward played one of his better games. He takes some bizarre sacks sometimes, and that happened again in this one. But he was making some plays. I think Washington's defense has a lot to work out this offseason. But once again, Washington State, it's like, oh, we scored like just over 30. We're good. We don't need to score anymore. And they didn't. And Washington continued to score because that was the nature of the football contest. You know, we got to score more to win. And Washington State was like, no, we're good. And so that's what ended up happening is Washington continued to pour it on. My man Penix, I thought, was really, really good in this game. Wasn't like perfect completing every ball, but when he did complete, it was a huge play downfield. He also caught a receiving touchdown or it might have ended up being a rushing touchdown because I think it was a lateral. It ended up being counted as a rushing touchdown.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the trick play, like the trick play where he threw it backwards and then that guy threw it. And it could have been a forward pass, but a lateral, I guess. That was a neat looking play. I thought he played really, really well and really left it all out there.
He had like almost 500 yards or something.
He's really fleshed out over the course of the year, you know. and I think he's just, you know, he's really, really shouldering the load and just... he was spraying it all over in this game. And
Scott said Penix loves some Cougars.
He sure does. And I think he was putting it to the Cougars with great verve. So but Washington State, I mean, it was a much more competitive game, I think I would say, than the final score indicated. They were right there.
It was close, most of it.
They just couldn't put together the drives they needed to in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, really competitive. I mean, one of the better Territorial Cups I can remember. But yeah, no, that was, and there was a lot at stake. So by the time this game played, and it was funny, I would have people asking me, even in like in the press box, people were talking about it at the USC Notre Dame game, and people on Twitter asking me, and they're kind of dumbfounded that they were like, wait a second. So USC could play Oregon or they could play Utah, but it matters who wins the Washington-Washington State game. Mm-hmm. And Washington would end up having the best record of all of those teams, but they wouldn't be the team that gets in. So they're deciding who goes, but it won't be them, even though they have won 10 games and those other teams did not. So there was a lot of confusion there. But yes, this was Washington's opportunity to not only knock out their hated Ducks, but potentially – have a path to the Rose Bowl. So that was pretty cool. But they came on really strong. This was the highest scoring, I'll say Apple Cup, but the highest scoring Territorial Cup ever. 702 total yards for Washington. It's the most by any team in the history of the Apple Cup. Pretty good. Third most single game total yards in Washington program history. They currently lead the country in third down percentage. Did you know that? 57.1%. Ooh. So they pretty good from the Huskies.
10-2 in his first year.
10-2. Kalen DeBoer. And they are not going to the championship game. Washington State, they would be going if we kept the divisions, right? They would. Utah kind
of. Oh, yeah. No, it would be Washington versus USC.
Yeah.
In the title game.
Washington State, they allowed Washington to convert on, you ready? 11 of 13 third down. So
is that bad?
Really hard to get them off the field. 84.6%.
Yeah. I mean, Wazoo's defense went pear shaped in this game.
They're really good. Zero tackles for loss. Not a single tackle for loss in this game. Like, how do you do that? And Wazoo ran 22 more plays than Washington, 89-67. But yeah, you got to force some negative plays. You got to get what, I mean, to just, that's gotta be demoralizing when you just never get a third down, never get a third down stop. So,
yep.
We do have a bunch of people that are really hoping for Washington to get to Pasadena. It's not a guarantee. Like the Rose Bowl could still pick Utah, but Utah went last year. They would have four losses as opposed to Washington with two. So it looks pretty clear. Could Oregon State get selected, or you think it's Washington all the way?
I think at this point it would probably be Washington.
Yeah.
And I think Washington fans would travel like crazy. And not to say Oregon State wouldn't, but I think Washington's a bigger brand. And it'll probably get more eyeballs. I mean, it could end up being a Washington-Ohio State matchup in the Rose Bowl. And that would draw some eyes.
No, I think it would.
Also, that game would be, I think, 50-49, something like that.
Ooh.
It'd be nuts.
It'd be
a lot of fun.
Okay. This was the Apple Cup, I believe. We have number five team.
Oregon Ducks.
No, this was big game.
Big game. With the, is there, no, the.
Just the big game. This is the big game.
The big game. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So number five, I'd switch it. Thank you, Dave, for having me switch that. Oregon and number four.
Oregon State Beavers.
This was, I think it's one of the contenders for the best game of the year in the Pac-12.
Insanity.
Absolute nutty shit going on in this game. And not like a great, like, it's a great game in the Pac-12 context. Like, it's a great Pac-12 game because it had insanity involved in it. Like, it was just the exact circumstances that needed to happen for Oregon State to win this game presented themselves. Oregon forgot how to play special teams. They were just like, no, we're not going to do it. We're not going to do it the way you tell us to.
What is this kicking game?
The way we think about it is we're going to drop a punt snap on the goal line, and we're just going to hang out and sit there with it, and we're just going to think about things. We're going to see a kickoff that's going to land at the 1 yard line, and instead of fielding it and fair catching it, we're just going to watch it and see if it bounces a weird way. And it does, and then we're going to field it, and we're only going to return it for 8 yards. That's what we're going to do. And Oregon State's like, yeah, exactly. That's what you're going to do. And then we're going to win the football game. Oregon was up 31-10 in this game. And it looked like they were in full control. Looked like Oregon State was pretty much dead in the water. And then Jonathan Smith decides to go basically triple option. Service Academy offense. Just stops throwing the ball with Ben Gilbranson, who was throwing like nothing but picks. And instead decides to run the ball with like, I don't know, guys that, like, literally, did they just pick them out of the crowd before the game? Like, who is Isaiah Newell? Like, what is that name? But he's a guy who ran for 2 touchdowns in this game. He, like, came in after, like, every single other running back was hurt or dinged up for a second. Oh, yeah, here's Isaiah Newell. And, like, you can't prove to me that Isaiah Newell is Isaiah Newell. Or they just didn't, like, put a shirt on some, like, Jaquizz Rodgers was hanging out in the stands. And like, hey, put this shirt on real quick, and we're going to call you Isaiah Newell. Because he looked electric running the ball, all Oregon State running backs do. And they ended up 43 carries for 268 yards and 5 touchdowns. But in the second half, it was like their run game was unstoppable. Like, Oregon could do nothing against it. They came back in the game running the ball. How often do you see a comeback where they are just running the ball the comeback? And they basically just poured it on unanswered and ended up winning 38-34. It was, you know, again, a lot of people are going to come down on Land Danning for the fourth down call. It was a remarkably similar situation to the Washington-Oregon game where he decides to go for it on a 4th-and-1. And get stopped. And again, I think because it was almost exactly the same situation, I'm going to say what I said then. Right decision, probably the wrong play call. You know, don't run it with your hobbled quarterback. That's basically the answer. Probably try to sneak it if you're going to run it with him.
Yeah.
Don't try to get him outside because he can't really move right now. But I think it was the right decision. I think you have to know what game you're in at that moment. And in that moment, is their defense going to stop Oregon State?
Yeah, just at some point, I get it that the right decision, but if you're not making, like, you know, sometimes it's you might want the right mathematical call, but you have to do, like, you know, if you're going, oh, hey, you have the best odds playing blackjack. Well, if you're staying on 16, then you know, if you're doing the wrong things, but, like, you're playing the right game, you know, like, I feel like that's, you're causing
no, problems. But I think that's what it would be. What he would be doing in that moment is being risk averse, and he would be staying on a 16 against an 18 or whatever, right? By electing to punt it away right then. You're not playing, like, the thing is, if you're going to play,
it's your own 29.
Yeah, like, but if you're going to play blackjack the right way, you hit on the 16 even against a 17. Because,
right, but I would say if there's the hit is like you're assuming the hit, there's only one thing you can do. Give me one card dealer. But there's a skill involved to this. It's like a little bit different because there's something like you have to do the right.
You can't. The call, I think, was bad.
Yeah.
Like, and that's where I you know, if you're going to make that call, then punting is the right move. But there's a menu of options available to you within the play call. And
yeah.
I think the decision, like the strategic decision, the tactical decision, whatever you want to call it, to go is the right one. It's just, if you're going to do it, you really need to fine tune how you're going to do it.
Right. And I think they've proven that they've, like, every time we have this discussion, it's because it doesn't work.
The first
I don't want to be results oriented. I want to be like,
and
make the right call.
The first one, the running back slips. And I think he slipped because the blocking was getting blown up front. I think there's an aversion with a lot of programs to a QB sneak. I don't know why. I think it's because it's seen as like a little bit cheap. Just line up a bunch of your running backs behind the quarterback and just push him a yard. You can do that. Almost everybody can.
Yeah.
UCLA's perfected it. They should make an offense entirely out of their QB sneaks. They get like 7 yards pop. But that's basically the I think that's going to be a focus. And again, sort of the same way that the Washington game, the much bigger and much more impactful play was the botched snap on the previous drive. This one, the 4th-and-1, is going to get focused on if their special teams doesn't go completely stupid on 2 plays, the Oregon State isn't even afforded the opportunity for the comeback.
Yeah. Well, another thing for me being old. So when it was 31-10, so I'm in the press box and I'm tweeting out, and I tweeted out something like, Oregon just went up 21 points on Oregon State. I said, so in the tweet, I said, if this score holds, it will be USC versus Oregon in the Pac-12 championship game. Like, I didn't say I think it's going to hold. I just said if this is the end up being the result, USC and Oregon will play.
Fucking all the other stuff. Hater.
And someone was tagging like Old Takes Exposed and stuff, Old Takes Exposed responded like, this isn't a take, and it was like, I don't know what it was, but somebody like shared it, and I don't think people even read. You can't even read the 140 characters.
What I've understood on Twitter is that, so like, I do a lot of trolling, so I expect some trolling back. But
this wasn't
also
trolling.
There's also like some remarkably like stupid people out there who like don't. It's a real case study in the Dunning-Kruger syndrome where like
not familiar.
Well, it's the idea that incompetent people tend to overrate their own competence in areas because they are actually ignorant of their incompetence because they are so incompetent. And I think it happens to people, especially on Twitter, is because it's such a it's very takes driven. You know, yes. You got to have a hard take, and so like basic things like reading comprehension don't read the word if. They don't read that. They don't even understand that you were not making a prediction. You were simply saying the facts.
I'm like trying to figure out who USC is going to play. And I just said, if this holds, this what's going to happen. And
yep.
I was rooting for Oregon State. I wanted them to play. I love watching Oregon State, you know?
You were rooting tooting.
I like Oregon State. I picked Oregon State. That's why I wanted them to come back. So it was like the weirdest thing. And it just kept happening. I'm like, bad takes, man. I'm like, do you understand what a take is? Like, that's not a take.
Nobody.
Why did they have... Both have home jerseys. I loved it.
It was really pretty. I don't care. It was fine.
Yeah. I missed why that was.
Well, if USC and UCLA do it, why not them?
So this early on, I know that's good. Early on in big game, I felt like Oregon State was sort of like going to be in control. It was 10-7. Oregon State was up and they were driving. And I was like, oh, I feel pretty good about it. They get that really bad spot. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
They should have got the first down. They didn't. They get stuffed. Jack Coletto, for the very first time in his career, got stuffed on a
yep.
– and it just seemed to turn the game. And, like, it's sort of like that shut down. Oregon State had the lead then. Then all of a sudden, it's 31-10. And it was like – that I felt like was a big turning point in the game. So when it looked like Oregon State had the momentum and everything was on their side and then they lost it all completely, to get it back the way they did without throwing the football is one of the more remarkable things I've seen – in a football game, that you know, the punter dropping it at your own two, that was bad. You know, the field position on kickoffs, they just kept screwing up there. You know, we talked about the going for the hobbled Bo Nix going for it, that was bad. But when Oregon State took the lead, I'm like, this is insane. Like, I don't know how this even happened. Oregon turned it over on downs their last three drives. They had a first and goal from the two, and couldn't score. Ben Gulbranson was 6 of 13. For 60 yards, 0 touchdowns, 2 picks. He did rush for 2 touchdowns. That's the winning quarterback's statistical line in a 21-point comeback. That's what your quarterback did. Like, what has that ever even happened before?
You like, if you're Oregon, you know they're running the ball and you just can't stop
it. Can't do it.
That was, you know.
And Oregon's pretty good at stopping the run. Like, they're bad in pass defense, right? I mean.
Oregon State, man. That's a well-coached football team.
It is a well-coached team. 0-for-5 on fourth down for Oregon. So you need to get a couple of those.
Yep.
So all three of their fourth quarter drives ended on failed. They got turnover on down. So I think it's the first time they've ever gone 0-for-5 on fourth down. Now, something that's really important to you. Oregon did have a 14-0 advantage in the middle eight. So
hey.
They're plus 95 in the middle eight this season, but that didn't help for this one.
No, it did not win them the game.
Okay, we got to finish this up here. We got our number one team now.
USC Trojans.
Taking on the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. Give me my pot of gold.
Yeah.
I thought USC could have run away with this at a couple different points. It just didn't quite happen. But they were firmly in control of this game. It felt like at basically every juncture. It never really felt like Notre Dame was making a comeback. As much as the TV guys were trying to make it seem like they were, like USC basically every time Notre Dame looked like it was mounting a little bit of a string of plays, then Caleb Williams would come back and do something silly. Like just something absolutely ridiculous that you've never seen before. There was a scramble in this game where they did the count on the TV, and to get 15 yards or 20 yards or something like that, he had to run 80, where he spun out of the pocket, did this full circle, ran around, did the whole thing, and ended up sliding for a first down. And it was like he didn't slide because somebody was tackling him. He slid because he was tired because he ran so far. He was ridiculous in this game. His stats aren't really going to show it, but
he said I was tired at that point because he did run for 80 yards.
Yeah, he was. I mean, he was full on. Like, they could not bring him down. Mm-hmm. They had so many times where they had. There was one play where defensive tackles were in his face, like both of them just rushing at him, and he doesn't even take off and run. He just kind of backpedals a little bit. Keeps his eyes downfield, and the funny part was Jordan Addison had come open like 10 seconds before he even threw him the ball. Like, Jordan Addison's just hanging out on the right sideline, and he's just backing up And it's like, oh, no, he wants to get these defensive tackles tired for some reason before he ends up throwing the ball for the first down to the wide open receiver downfield. He was crazy. Absolutely ridiculous. Austin Jones, I thought, once again showed that he's a really good running back. Travis Dye's a little bit better, which is why he was playing and starting all these games. But Austin Jones is really good, too. He was exceptional in this game. And defensively, I thought USC was pretty bad. I mean, they let Drew Pine, who's not a good quarterback, complete all but three passes. I thought the secondary
He started off 15 of 15.
Yeah, I thought the secondary was pretty bad, but they did make a big play late. They were able to shut down the run, largely.
Yeah.
And that was key.
Willer got trolled a little bit because he said that Notre Dame was going to run for 850 yards, and they had 90.
So, again, this is one where, like, you and I, because, again, we've got context clues. Notre Dame has played Stanford and Cal this year.
I couldn't get the Stanford game out of my head. Like, they lost to Stanford.
Right.
Like, so you have to stink.
A lot of people.
I don't care if you beat Clemson.
Yeah, but that's my point. Is, like, a lot of people, like, got, I think, a little bit out over their skis about Notre Dame beating up on some shitty ACC teams, and I include Clemson in that.
Yeah. Who just lost to South Carolina.
If you lose to Stanford and you almost lose to Cal, like, you are a desperation ref thing from losing to Cal, you are a bad football team. And I thought USC actually, like, I don't think they played their A game, and they won by 11 in this game.
Yeah.
Like, I think they probably could have put it on them a little bit more. I thought offensively they weren't quite where they needed to be. And they scored 38, won this game by 11, looked comfortable doing it. I think they're
the clear, a garbage touchdown at the end.
They're the clear best team in the Pac-12 right now.
Yeah, that was it sort of was reversed. Like, they came out, they heard a lot about from the players we talked to, the coaches, that Notre Dame was going to be this physical team, and USC came out and ran the ball. They were the one that was, like, taking more play clock, they were longer possessions, and it forced Notre Dame to try to score quickly. But very similar to what Jack Plummer did against USC, where he has his, like, career game. He kind of had another one against UCLA too. Like, has, you know, not a good throwing quarterback for whatever reason against the LA schools. He had a, you know, career day. Drew Pine just was, I mean, he was dealing. Like, he was just finding, you know, they have another great tight end, Michael Mayer, that just, you know, absolutely making catches all over the place. I thought they did a good job of limiting the yards after catch, unlike what they did against Kincaid, you know, Utah, where he just kept, he would catch it and just run forever. This was more a possession kind of thing, but
and Mayer's nowhere near the player that Kincaid is.
No,
like he's a fine whatever Midwest tight end, but you know we do him different out here in the West.
He's good, and I would say they just did a nice job slowing down the run, shutting the run down to get, you know, Notre Dame under 100 yards, and they did a good job against Charbonnet too. He had 5 yards of carry, but you know he didn't get his 100, and so you know they were fine. They're not a good defense at all, but they did some good things.
They can pick their spots.
Yeah.
And they do, I think at this point, you can't just say, oh, they turn them over because it's variance and luck. It's they turn them over because they play really aggressive in the secondary. And guys are taught to crash, you know, get into the passing lanes and try to make plays. And, you know, that's what they do.
Yeah. I mean, they got the one interception. Kalen Bullock, he's really good. I mean, that was nice when you know, but The fumble they got was pretty lucky. It's just a exchange on the running, you know, it was like the mesh of a handoff, and Drew Pine drops it, and Raylan Goforth jumped on it. But those were big plays, and you didn't feel like this was going to be in doubt. Like, it might have been close, but you never felt like, okay, USC was going to lose this game.
No, and that was the thing. The announcers were trying to make it more than it was, but this was not I didn't think it was a close game.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's take a quick break. We'll come back and kind of wrap things up. I know David doesn't have a lot of time, so this is going to be a little weird episode. We might do another one later in the week, but back in a minute. All right. We're back on the Podcast of Champions. Are we going to do – do you want to do a quick preview show at some point?
We certainly can. I just don't know how long it will be. It's just one game.
Yeah, we might. So we might be able to get to some more of the questions and stuff then. I think we have a few. But it's going to be USC and Utah, the Pac-12 championship game. Like I said, Thursday night meetup, if you're going to be there. Park MGM is the media hotel, so that's where we'll be staying. I know Tom from Jockey will be there. I believe our buddy John from Trader Joe's will be there. So maybe we'll have some like giveaways, some other stuff for you guys. So hopefully you guys can come out there. You can tweet at, you know, tweet or just email us. Probably that's easier. I don't see the @s on tweets and stuff like all the time. But we do have a few email questions. You want to get to those, David?
I would love to get to some email questions.
Where are we starting?
All right. So I think we start with Rivalry Week from Nick.
Okay.
Gentlemen, with UCLA and USC moving to the Big Ten, what's going to happen with those rivalries? Obviously, UCLA will not independently schedule Cal or Stanford every year, and the more interesting thing is what happens to the USC-Notre Dame game. Is the Big Ten going to allow USC to schedule Notre Dame like they do? Or is that rivalry going to get moved to the sidelines? Have you guys heard anything about this stuff? Do you think the Big Ten is going to want the UCLA-USC game to be the last game of the year, just like Michigan-Ohio State? That's the way it should be played on Rivalry Week in the national spotlight. There is zero chance that USC is going to get rid of the Notre Dame game, I would imagine.
No.
And then two, I don't think UCLA has much interest in regularly scheduling Cal or Stanford or any former Pac-12 teams. I'm sure there will be like, they will treat them sort of like they do major Power Five, you know, programs where like, yeah, if we can get a game with them, that's great. But for the most part, I mean, those are recruiting competitors. And I think if you're not in the same conference and you don't have to play them, why would you?
You sort of give them extra exposure or whatever. I'm curious. I mean, I know David Shaw was expressing, I mean, he's gone now, but expressing interest in keeping those going. We don't know. We don't know what the Big Ten's going to do. We still have to hear from the regents, right? The one more meeting or whatever for UCLA.
It doesn't fucking matter. Nothing's happening. I don't know why they keep delaying this. They're not going to do anything.
It's grandstanding, right?
It's just to give content to columnists. I don't know, but they're not going to do anything.
I guess. Okay. Thanks, Nick, for that one. But yeah, we don't know the schedules. So we said, like, the Pac-12 fully embraced the non-division things. The Big Ten is keeping them because, like, you basically needed Purdue, you know, to matter. Like, Purdue's just going to be a sacrificial lamb to Michigan. The Pac-12 didn't want to do that. They wanted to put the two best teams in. And you know, the weird thing, you made the choice to put the two best teams in, but you might have screwed yourself because would you rather see Washington USC, Dave, or would you rather see Utah?
Yeah, no, it's true. I would rather see Washington USC.
The tiebreaker cut, like the, in an effort to, is all like the best intentions, right?
Now,
like,
but okay.
Unintended consequences.
We'll do a preview show.
Unintended consequences.
I've got some funny things to say about Utah USC.
Okay.
But it is funny that it's going to be that matchup to determine that. The winner.
Yeah, and no Michael Mothershed because he was a shining star in the last one.
Uh-huh.
But, like, it's funny. The unintended consequences were we would have made the two best teams, and you sort of, like, just the old way would have worked out better.
And it totally would have. And if in the weird scenario where UCLA had won out but still been kept out, even though they would have had the tiebreaker over Utah and USC.
Yeah.
But because USC didn't play Washington, it was going to go to, like, who did the best against Cal or whatever?
Right, yes. Just dumb stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, Washington ended up, yeah. So that was all very, very bizarre. But thanks for that one, Nick. Frank in Sacramento, even a blind squirrel finds an acorn once in a while. It seems crazy now to think about all the different coaches USC was dreaming about bringing in to replace sorry old Clay Helton. Among them were Matt Campbell, Luke Fickell, James Franklin, Kyle Whittingham, Mark Stoops, Eric Bieniemy, Bill O'Brien, and even Kalani Sitake. Could Mike Bone and Brandon Sosna have targeted a better coach than Lincoln Riley?
Hang on, Frank. The only reason that people weren't saying, oh, they should target Lincoln Riley is because everyone considered it a non-starter, like in the you know, whatever.
Right, like why would he go?
Why would he go? So that's why they were talking about all these guys. It wasn't like, oh, wow, they really found a diamond in the rough with old Lincoln Riley. No, they targeted one of the like best three coaches in the college game and landed him because they gave him a boatload of money and he was interested in the opportunity. Like,
yeah.
This isn't great scouting work. It's watching Oklahoma play football for the last like 7 years or whatever.
Yeah, that's funny. We got a comment, David Gould. So even David, why is USC not playing Washington in the conference championship game? Like, this is,
I don't know, because of how ASU did this year. I have no fucking idea, man.
There's like some weird tiebreaker.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Hey guys, just wanted to point out, this is a text message, just wanted to point out that a lot of talk this year has been on the importance of the Middle Eight. Seems like Oregon dominated the Middle Eight of the Civil War, but I think we should remind Lan Danning of the importance of the other remaining 52 minutes. He must have forgotten that. And as a reminder, if JT Daniels came to Oregon State, are they one loss and where would you have them ranked? Exactly. If they had competent quarterback X, whoever it is,
yes,
they would be a one loss team right now. And they still would have like probably that loss to Utah on the schedule, but who knows how that shifts if they're not turning the ball over every play. They'd be a top. I mean, they would be where USC is. I think there'd be no reason not to have them there. You know, they'd probably be lower just because it's USC versus Oregon State, but they would be in the mix for the playoff.
Yeah.
So that's crazy to think about. So the thing with,
because defense is so good, the running game is so good.
Yeah, I want to say about this about the analytics thing. Here's the thing with Oregon, and he's obviously going to get a bunch of shit for it, and I hope it doesn't make him deviate from his thing, because what he has done is he's obviously identified some like analytical things that help you win. If he keeps doing them, it's going to even out in the long run.
Yes.
But he's got to keep doing them. And I don't think he, you don't want him to get gun-shy at this point, because I think he's got one of the best approaches to game management currently in the Pac-12. Dominating the middle eight does matter. It's not going to win you every game, but it does matter, and he approaches it with the right mentality. You know, we need to manage our time.
Once the middle eight was over, he decided to stop. He's like, won the middle eight, baby.
But it's
how
just
much time's left? Yeah, screw that. I gotta fuck the rest. I'm gonna go watch Netflix.
Like, here's the thing: if Bo Nix doesn't get hurt on that play against Washington, then when he comes back in the game, they might pull that one out. And then in this game, they probably win it if Bo Nix is healthy. Like, if he's able to run the ball, they probably win.
Yeah.
And then we're talking about an entirely different thing. We're talking about an 11-1 Oregon that looks like the absolute playoff contender that would be no doubt favored over USC in the title game. But Bo Nix got hurt, and so they're not. So, you know, you can obviously, you're an Oregon State fan, make your jokes about Oregon for sure. I fully support you in it. But I think if you're an Oregon fan, you've got to still be pretty excited about Landanning and his acumen. Like, his approach to the game, I think, is worlds better than a lot of Pac-12 coaches.
I see. I mean, I'm a math guy, and I like a lot of that stuff. But, and maybe there's just like a traditionalist thing in me. I don't want to see David Shaw punting, like someone put in the comments, like David Shaw punting at the USC 29. Like, I don't want to see you do that. Like, you do stupid stuff like that. But I don't mind if it's like, you know, hey, we're going to play defense on this one. We don't want to just give up a score if we don't get it. And maybe the math says 55%, you should go for it. But you don't have to go for it every single time. Like, especially you've been not doing
it
much.
This is the part I like, is that I think you're right. Like, I don't think you need to do it as aggressively as he did, but I think he was recognizing also his defense wasn't good.
Yeah.
I think once his defense gets better, I think you'll see a little bit less aggression in those spots, but I think it's also a sign of recognition. Like, my defense isn't good. It's not going to be able to stop this team the way I want it to.
Yeah.
And so I need to put it in the hands of the offense, because the offense is obviously the best part of the team. And it's really great to see that from a defensive guy. You know, he is a defensive coach. And so to have that, like, not attached to his ego, not like trying to, project his own feelings about defense onto his players who are inadequate at this moment, instead saying, well, our offense is the best part, so let's lean on it. I think it didn't work out. Like, it didn't work out the way they wanted it to, but I think you don't throw the baby out. This is pretty good. And I think in the future, you're going to see a little bit more willingness to punt, because he's going to have a better defense. He's going to, you know, figure that side of the ball out, probably, hopefully, by firing Tosh Lapoy.
And everything's not a spreadsheet. I mean, this is a game being played by a bunch of young kids, right? And there's emotions. And if you just have a feeling like, oh my God, like my quarterback was at a frat party last night and his girlfriend broke up with him or whatever, like, I'm not going to go for this one. Just if there's like these human factors that say, I know the math says we should probably, I'm not going to. Like, I would much rather see that. But there's, and I think someone put in the chat as well, what kind of message does it send to the defense when you're going for it all the time? Does it demoralize your already struggling defense?
I don't buy that shit.
You don't buy that stuff at all.
Like, I don't buy the, like, what does it say to your defense? Well,
okay.
It says what the stats tell your defense, that they suck. I mean, play better. Play better in the other moments that don't matter, and maybe your coach will trust you when it actually does matter.
Try not to suck.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. The defense should know what they are, and I think it's better to play that game than to not than to just play the hope game. I mean, how much shit would he be getting for if he'd punted it away and Oregon State just drove right down the field because their defense isn't good, and everyone's like, well, you had to know your defense wasn't good. What are you doing?
Yeah.
It was 4th-and-1. Why didn't you go for it?
I don't think people are going to be – as if it's your own 29, it's just too ingrained. People are like, that's okay if you don't go for that one, even though like it says you probably should. But I would rather just like, as soon as you go wide or as soon as you like take the snap, like now you're like, it might as well be 4th-and-4. Like you're starting 4 yards back. Like,
yeah. The play call, no question. The play call was not good. Don't do that with your hobbled quarterback.
Yeah. I like the option of just like pushing it forward. Like, you know, I think UCLA did that.
The super sneak, man.
On like a 3rd-and-4.
And they got 8 yards.
Yeah.
Do the super sneak.
It was pretty good. We got one last email, and I think we got a comment we're going to put on there. USC in the college football playoff. Hey, guys, question for Dave. Do you think the conference wants USC to win the conference and make the playoff, or do you think the team slash coaches slash fans would rather see USC lose the conference championship game and have the Pac-12 get left out in favor of two SEC Big Ten teams? Thanks, Coach B in San Diego, and says, PPPS, we lost in the finals. The invitation started out as a joke but turned into superstition. Thanks for being part of an amazing high school season for the Ramona High Bulldogs.
Go Bulldogs.
Go Bulldogs.
Well, congrats on the season, Coach B. For USC, I think the conference would prefer that they win and go to the playoff. It's better for the conference as a whole, even if it is USC, who's not going to be here in 2 years, to get the Pac-12 on the national stage. It's better monetarily for everyone, but it's also just better. And it also sets up so that there's knock-on effects. You know, this means that one of, more than likely, Washington or Utah is going to get in the Rose Bowl. And that's really good for the conference.
Right.
You know, if Utah beats USC, then it's going to be Utah in the Rose Bowl. And then USC, who knows, Cotton Bowl or maybe lower. I mean, it kind of depends
on how
bad it
would
look. It'll
probably be New Year's 6, yeah.
It would probably be New Year's 6, but it's not.
Because they got 11 wins, yeah. You know, so it's like.
No, yeah. But end result, I think it's better for the conference as a whole for USC to do it. It would be spiteful to not want them to do it. So I would think the conference wants USC. I think everyone else in the conference would love to see Utah win this game. Like, and by that I mean the fan bases of literally 11 other programs.
Not Washington.
Yes, Washington wants USC to win because then they get the Rose Bowl.
Right.
But everyone besides Washington and USC wants USC to lose.
Right, they're Oregon, and I think the conference would like that. Just having another team in the Rose Bowl, a playoff team, another team in the Rose Bowl, and if it was, it would be one thing if USC and UCLA were leaving. This is the last hurrah. Like, you still have one more year, so like it's another year you can promote and like, hey, we had a college football playoff, and that will, you know, USC makes the playoff. Does that make Utah better next year? Does that make Oregon better? Washington, like, now they're like, here's the bar. Like, you've set the bar, and it's not just USC that's going to be there. It's going to be these other teams too. But I don't know, Dave. We haven't played this for a while.
That blast came from the Death Star. That thing's operational.
Let the heat flow through you.
See, this shit I have to deal with. So that's the thing, is that USC, it's fucked up, man. Like, it's just super fucked up. They're way ahead of schedule.
They are ahead of schedule.
They're like 1 point against Utah away from being 12-0 right now.
Crazy.
It's unjust.
More Clay Helton. Someone pointed out that, like, Austin Jones, like, another big game. He had 156 yards or whatever it was. But he kind of had a huge game in Clay Helton's, like, last game when he got fired for Stanford, when they lost to Stanford.
Yeah, he's the true MVP of the program.
He, like, really, yeah.
Yeah.
Travis Dye goes down. He steps up. He gets Clay Helton fired apart, you know.
Yeah, it's super fucked up. So if they can get the defense figured out, you know, they're going to be – I mean, they basically already are kind of Oklahoma at, you know – Lincoln Riley's. I wouldn't say they're the best Oklahoma team that he had, but they're an Oklahoma team that made the playoff. Like, that's basically what we're looking at right now. You know, all offense, probably the best offense in the country, or, you know, one of the contenders, and then a defense that they play it sometimes. It's going to be good enough to win the Pac-12, and we'll see what happens on Friday. We'll do a preview show, but
Do we know what the initial line is, or?
It's USC -1.5 right now.
Wow.
I'll just tell you right now, I'd probably take USC right now.
Yeah, I would too, probably.
But if they win that, I think it's no doubter they're in the playoff.
And Caleb Williams looked like he's going to win the Heisman.
He should. I mean, CJ Stroud kind of took a fat shit on the field against Michigan.
I mean, he had three. I think he had three touchdowns, but like two picks, and
he looked like fat ass in the last part of that game.
Yeah, he wasn't very good.
Yeah.
One last one. Carson said, "How did the Huskies lose to ASU? Also, is Kalen DeBoer the best coach in the Pac-12, or was Lake the worst coach ever? Maybe both."
I would say the loss to ASU. Michael, my man Penix was not fully right in that game, and their defense.
That was right after you bought the shirt, right?
Yeah, their defense was...
I think it's your fault.
Their defense was at its worst in that game. That was a big part of it. But, you know, weird things can happen. I would say Washington is one that was, they were aided by a little bit of a weak schedule that helped Washington get to 10-2, but I think they also improved over the course of the year.
Yeah. No, I would agree with you there, but that's a bizarre one. That was one that, like, there's been some, I think the Florida loss really hurt the conference. The Georgia, Oregon, not as much, but man, that ASU one, what if Washington was one, you know, they would be in the championship game, right?
Yep.
And that would be two teams that haven't played yet. Two 11-1 teams playing each other, like even more. Like Washington could have a playoff. That Arizona State game could have kept Washington out of the playoff, which is insane. All right. Well, I think that's going to wrap things up, David. Yeah, we'll try to do a quick show. I don't know if we'll do video. We'll figure it out what we can do this week, but we'll do like a preview show where we'll do our pick for the Pac-12 championship game. I did tabulate all of our picks for the season, our preseason picks. I think we did pretty good on a bunch of them. Kind of a little back and forth a little bit, but I counted like how many – what the, you know, if we said like one team was 6-6, if they went 6-6 or 5-7, and then how many we got right. Sometimes you get a whole bunch wrong, but you get the number right, the total, right. You know, picks right and stuff. So I kind of figure all that. So we'll do an episode about that maybe sometime in December with the Bulls and everything. So, all right. Well, that's going to wrap it up. That is David Woods. I am Ryan Abraham. Thank you for tuning in to this emergency edition of the Podcast of Champions. David Shaw. Sayonara, sir. You served the conference well for a while. It's time to go.
He brought Stanford football back to where it's supposed to be.
Pre-Harbaugh days. That's exactly where they are. But thank you so much for tuning in. Hope you enjoyed the show. And we will talk to you next time.